Money FM 89.3, best of your money. Money and Me on Your Money, only on Money FM 89.3.
Today, a closer look at the forecast for silver. David Morgan is a precious metals commentator. He is founder of the Morgan Report. He started investing before he turned 18. And for 30 years, says he's been a student of money, metals and mining. We're going to talk to David today about building wealth through silver stocks. Good morning, David. How are you?
I'm doing well. Thank you.
Thanks for joining us. So silver spot price around $25.15. Back in August, it reached about $29 an ounce. That was a seven-year high, a gain of nearly 39% since mid-July when the precious metal rally got into a swing. So gold has traditionally been investors' favorite safe haven and somewhere to turn when bonds offer flat or negative returns and the stock markets are choppy. Certainly been the case during the COVID crisis when we saw gold hit record highs. Help us understand the big picture for silver. How has silver been performing through this year, through the pandemic, and how has silver been performing relative to gold?
Well, they both serve the same function at times. They both can be perceived and used as safe haven investments. However, as you state, gold is the bellwether safe haven investment. During stressful times such as we're experiencing, then silver is perceived in that manner, safe haven. Whereas in good times, silver is perceived more as an industrial commodity or an industrial metal used for high-tech industries, electricity, that type of thing. Mm. So right now, since we're having the situations globally that we are experiencing, silver actually started to outperform gold this year, as you stated. Silver's actually been pretty much on a tear. It got overextended for a while. It's in a correction phase right now, and I believe we're going to see a lot higher prices next 2 to 3 years.
Are you seeing demand for more industrial, for silver, you know, the more industrial metal? Is demand for silver beating gold?
Yeah, well, there's very little demand for industry, from the industry for gold, very little. For silver, if you go back about two decades, the industrial demand for silver is about 35% of the total market. Today, it's 60% of the total market, or at least 50, depending on which silver study you research. So we've determined that the amount of silver two decades ago was about 550 million ounces on an annual basis. Mm-hmm. Today, it's about 850 million ounces on an annual basis. So we've gained about 300 million ounces of silver on an annual mining basis. And yet during that increase of 300 million ounces, the amount used for industry has gone up from 35% to over 50%. So that shows that the industrial demand for silver just continues to increase. But to be specific, mm-hmm. because of the global situation at hand, the amount of industry use for silver this year is expected to decline by about 10%. But silver always moves at the margin. Like any market, it's at the last buyer, it's the last bid. When you bid a stock, it's a dollar a share, and someone says, I'll pay $1.05, and that's the closing price. It was the last bid. The last offer made, and it was accepted. So we are in a situation now where we're seeing that take place in all the markets, and especially silver, because it's so small a market, that any new buying from investment demand is what moves the market higher. Industrial demand is important. It's about half the market, but that's not really what moves it. What moves it is how much safe haven buying, how much investment demand, how much monetary demand silver has.
All right, let's pick up on that. Have investors been flocking to silver? And maybe you can elaborate a little on what has been driving its moves.
Well, that's it. The amount of purchases have been extraordinary this year. We've seen probably for the first time since silver was actually in the monetary base and silver was perceived by everybody as money, because that was the only money accepted alongside gold. Since that time, since it was demonetized officially, this is the first year in a long time where the investment demand has been over like 10% of the market. The investment demand right now, if it continues for the last quarter of the year, could be, I'm not saying would be, but could be equal to or close to equal to the industrial demand, which is extraordinary. We haven't seen this kind. And I think part of it has to do with the conference in Davos this year, which is, of course, where the global elite meet for a lot of different reasons. But there's always financial markets discussed. And this gentleman, Scott Menard from Guggenheim, their chief investment officer, stated to Bloomberg, as they're interviewing him, what was his go-to number one best investment for 2020. And he said silver. And the Bloomberg interviewer said, silver? Why not gold? And he says, because silver is so much more undervalued than gold is. And I think that was the first step. The second step was that Warren Buffett, notably one of the best investors in our lifetime, who was always liked silver. He's gone to the silver market a few times. He bought 129.7 million ounces of silver off the exchange back in 1999, has now purchased gold through a mining company called Barrick. And he doesn't like gold nearly as much as silver, yet he is going for gold. So this is a turning point, I believe, where you have very big investors that have lots of clout with the investment world stating silver and gold as their investment choices.
Great insight there, David. We're speaking with David Morgan. He's a publisher of the Morgan Report. David, 2 months ago, you said the silver bull run has just begun. And by the way, when I look for silver on YouTube, you're all that my algorithm shows up for me. So, you know, we're thrilled to have you with us. 2 months ago, you said that the silver bull run has just begun. So where are we now in the precious metal cycle?
Well, maybe you misstated that, or I misstated it. We are in the beginning of the biggest run. The bull run really started in 2003. But the last leg of any bull market, be it the real estate market, the stock market, the bond market, any market you want to look at, the last part of that run-up gets accelerated in the final stage of it. So in my study, it's pretty easy to prove analytically that we are in the last stage or the last phase of this market. So we're beginning that one, and that's the one you want to be in. You can forget the last 15 or 20 years. If you say, well, come on, silver is at, you know, $25 U.S., and it was $5, you know, back when David started on the internet, you know, that's a five-fold increase. That's nothing compared to what's ahead of us. The last time we saw this kind of a setup was in 1979. Silver started at that year at $6 an ounce. A year later, in January of 1980, it was $50 an ounce. It went up 800% in 1 year. That's the kind of gains you see at the end of these markets, the last phase, the last leg up. And that's what I was stating. This is the one you want to be on.
All right.
That, so, again, excuse me for interrupting, but that's why I think Warren Buffett and Scott Menard have made the comments that they've made. They know how markets work, just like I do. And they understand that you could have kind of wasted a lot of time going back and forth and back and forth in the gold and silver markets, although overall they've gone up. There's no question about that. But they know when to get on the game to make the game work the best for them, and that's the last leg up.
Okay, so there have been a number of voices speculating that gold could hit $3,000. What's the upside for silver in 2020?
I think we've probably seen the upside this year. We hit 30. It's possible with a lot of concern about the election in the United States and more worry about the financial system, et cetera, that you could see silver shoot up to maybe 35. I don't think that's going to happen. I think that's a stretch for this year. But we built a huge base and a larger following, and that's what's important. And the investment demand is off the charts this year. I mean, it's a huge amount of investment demand. So that's built a solid base of physical silver by people that know how markets operate, know that silver is still, even at 25, the most undervalued, underrecognized, and misunderstood investment on the planet. And those are the smart money. That's why Warren Buffett bought silver when it was on an inflation-adjusted basis, the lowest price it had ever been in all of recorded history. He bought silver that was equivalent to under the 22-cent an ounce depression price. Now, I know when he bought it at 5, it's slightly under 5, Five is a bigger number. $5 is a bigger number than 22 cents. I know that. But for the listeners, if you adjust that $5 in 1999 to the equivalent value of the 1933 price, you will find that that five is less than 22 cents in 1933 terms. That's what I'm saying. And he knew it. He's a value investor. He bought silver at the best value anyone. I did too myself, but a few followers of mine and others. I'm not saying we're the only ones. My point being is that the millionaires were not interested in silver at that time. The billionaires were interested in silver at that time, and they're interested in silver again now.
All right. Now, I want to pick up on that point of U.S. elections. When it comes to the U.S. elections, some bet on blue, some on red. Are you betting on gold or silver or both? Do you think the election outcome will impact the prices of silver going forward?
Yes, and it doesn't matter who wins. It's really that simple, because there is no change in the political class that is going to change the financial structure significantly enough to make a difference for people seeking safe havens from this point forward.
David, are you with us?
I am.
Okay. You sort of faded out. Yeah. I thought you were going to elaborate on that. I mean, could a Biden win with, you know, his emphasis on solar energy? Could that prove well for silver versus Trump?
Well, it could, but what I stated, I'll just restate. I'm sorry, I don't know why I cut out. But I said that regardless of who wins in the political class, there's not enough clout to change the financial structure enough to make any difference for people seeking a safe haven. Mm-hmm. So be it red, be it blue, doesn't matter. We want to go to the safe havens, which are the precious metals. So you might get a slightly different bump, but it's not going to make any difference in the long run. It just doesn't. There's too many financial mistakes that have been poured out upon the world with the United States' ability to print money at will, that's flooded the financial system on a global basis. And there's a price to be paid. Mm. And at some point, gold and silver do an accounting of all the misallocation of capital, all the wasted money that has been thrown out to do really basically helping the banking system at large and not the people on the planet. And there's a price to pay for that. And we're going to see that in rather short order in the next few years.
So I read on your site, you say China has gained a stunning hammerlock on 97% of global production. So if we take a long view of history, what does China's hold on the precious metals market mean for the long-term investor in silver?
Yeah, it's 97% on the REE market. It's the rare earth element market that they basically own almost all of it. On the silver side, China does have an important role, and they do produce most of the refined silver because they smelt it, and they don't have the EPA restrictions that they have, the environmental protection restrictions that are pretty much mandated in most of the other parts of the world. But China is a very big influence on silver. If you go back in the early 90s, they exported 100 million ounces of silver on an annual basis. In the early 2000s, they switched over and imported 100 million ounces on an annual basis. That's a swing of 200 million ounces per year differential over that decade. And they do not export any of the silver that they mine themselves, which is very limited in China. Well, that's not true. Excuse me. I'll take that back. China is like the second producer of silver in the world, according to them, not according to the Silver Institute or CPM Group out of New York. I don't doubt that the Chinese are probably right on up there with Mexico and Peru, and none of it leaves the country. They know how valuable it is for everything electrical and high tech. Anything in the high tech world requires silver. It's essential. There's no replacement. And without it, you basically couldn't have what we have today. I couldn't be doing this interview without silver in this phone.
He's David Morgan, precious metals commentator and founder of the Morgan Report, helping us understand how to build our wealth through silver stocks. All right, David, for people who've never touched silver stocks in their lives, what are the range of ways to participate in the silver market?
Like anything that we do as humans, and I'm speaking for others, I don't mean to, but we always want the best that we can get or the best we can afford. When we shop for a dress or clothing or food or a shelter or transportation, you want to stretch your currency to get the best you can. But when it comes to investing, a lot of people want to find the cheapest thing they can, and that is not logical, yet it's done all the time. So in the silver world, you want the blue chips to start with. You want the very best of the best that you can get. It's better to have one share of a blue chip than a million shares of a stock worth 0.0001. Having a million shares of a stock that's worth 1/100th of a penny might make you feel good in your ego because you have a lot of it. But a lot of something that's worthless is still worthless. So I would say, you want me to give you some names? I'll just start off. I think one of the best to look at would be Pan American Silver. Their mandate is to be the number one world producer, primary producer of silver. One of my other favorites on the blue chip side is Wheaton Precious Metals. It used to be called Silver Wheaton. It was primarily focused on streams of silver, but they broadened out into gold and they changed the name. Let's see. There's another one that's more risky at this time, which is on the big board, the New York Stock Exchange big board, I mean in the United States. And it is under the symbol of AG, which is the atomic designator for silver. So there's three to start looking at. I don't really want to recommend the more speculative companies. I reserve those pretty much for our paid subscribers. But there are there's a lot of juice in finding a silver mine early. But the problem is it's a very, very high-risk situation. Only one out of 4,000 or 5,000 companies actually goes on to become a mine. So it's more of a lottery ticket type of thing. It's not an investment. It's a rank speculation at best. So stick with the blue chips. Mm-hmm. As you get more educated and you have the ability to speculate, then you might consider doing so. But to start off speculating is a good way to go broke.
So if the best bang for buck is in well-chosen mining stocks, David, what do you use as your criterion to pass through these stocks?
It's pretty simple. It's not easy to do that much, but it's not like I'm analyzing an auto company where the automobiles are different, like a Tesla versus a General Motors or something. When we're looking at mining companies, if they're producing silver, the end product is exactly the same for every silver producer. It's the same exact thing. Mm-hmm. So because of that, it makes that part very easy. So now all I have to determine is how they account for it and find out who has the best margins. So who's making the most profit per ounce? But then I also have to look how long are they going to be in business and what is their depletion rate? In other words, if they're producing the most money per ounce, but the mine only lasts a year further, then I'd be very dumb to invest in that for very long, if at all. So there's other factors, but you want to basically look at what the margin is. You want to look at the life of the mine. You want to look at see if there's any replacement value, meaning they have other properties or projects that will be able to come on stream after they've depleted some of their ones that they're working now. You also want to look at management. You want to look at the jurisdiction that they're in and see if there's anything coming down in the future that could cause a disruption in the mining activity. And then you want to just make sure that there's enough margin for unseen consequences such as a labor strike, maybe weather conditions, some type of innovation that changes the dynamics of the whole mining industry. So there's a lot to think about, but the root basics are pretty simple. Who has the best margin on that product? It's the same product across the board.
So if we take a step back, David, at the broader economic picture, I've heard you say in interviews that you believe opportunities can be had, that there is money to be made very quickly when markets are in what you call the mania stage. And you've divided market movements into three phases, and the mania phase, the last, there is a steep climb. So are we in the mania phase? And if so, what does that mean for silver?
Now, the mania phase will only begin after we've taken out the intermediate high that happened in 2011. So that's about $50 US. That will sort of be, if you want a number, I'll give you that number. There's no exact anything in this business, but that's pretty close. So once we get to a new high, there'll be a lot of people that will say it's a triple top. It's been there the third time of selling, and it may stall out for a while. If it breaks through, and I believe it will, then there'll be a whole bunch of algorithms that come in from the quants on Wall Street and other places around the planet that use mathematics to determine buy and sell signals, and they'll say it's a new high, and they'll power into the silver market, and that will drive it. That's when you get into the mania phase. Then you'll start getting programs like yours that they'll just tell you the gold price every day. They'll start with the silver price and say, well, silver was up 12% today, and gold was only up 3%. Gold did hit a new high of $6,812, but silver, and you'll hear their voice, and that's when you're in the mania phase. Last very long. You got to be very, very careful, especially in the silver market, because there aren't that many participants. And the big players I outlined earlier in the interview have a very substantial position. So they will be selling their silver, not looking to get that very top tick. They'll be selling it into the public when it's whatever price, and there's a lot of mania and a lot of people want to buy it. They'll be selling it to those people.
Okay, we love getting into investors' minds, David, understanding how investors think. So I understand you used to be a gold bug. So when and why did you get into this quest to understand silver?
Because when I saw a gold peak on my birthday, and I saw that gold had gone in December, I remember I said from January to January, silver went up 800%. Well, January to January for gold, it only went up 300%. And being a little bit greedy in those days, not so much anymore, I thought, geez, if I'd only had silver instead of gold, look at what could have happened.
Which year was this, David?
I played that pretty perfectly at the time.
Which year was this? 30 years ago.
That was in 1979, 1980. 40 years ago. Yeah. I was just a kid. So I thought, why did the Hunts buy silver? Why weren't they buying gold? And so I started this deep study in the silver market. And the more fascinated it became, because of it wasn't just the money, which in those days, everyone, not everyone, but most people thought of silver as money, because in 1965, the coinage changed from silver to copper, basically. But there was still, a lot of silver around, not in the stores or in the, cash registers or anything, but in the consciousness of that generation. They knew that silver was money. They equated it with money. The printed pieces of paper said silver certificate will pay the bearer on demand one silver dollar at the U.S. Treasury. So all that was kind of in their minds of being, fresh. Of course, now, 40 years later, nobody thinks of silver as money, hardly. I do, and a few others. But regardless whether it's money or not, it's a good investment. And I think the idea that why was it so much superior in performance than gold, that was what got to me. I had to find out why.
As monetary systems evolve and we look at central banks racing to create digital currencies, do you think this could impact the price of silver moving forward if, hypothetically, we're looking at digital currencies backed by silver or gold?
From the monetary authorities, I can almost put my life on the fact that they'll never put silver into the monetary system again. They may put gold in there. In fact, it's a pretty safe bet that gold will enter. Now, in the private sector, with the private cryptocurrencies, you will see silver involved. In fact, I have to admit, as a participant in the LODE structure, the LODE cryptocurrency, if you want more information, it's the symbol for silver, AG.LODE.1ONE. So it's AG.LODE.1. That's a silver and gold, but primarily silver-backed cryptocurrency. But I wrote a essay and then made a slideshow of what if silver was treated like gold. And the whole premise of that lecture was if silver was treated as money at this point in time, all through the bifurcation of silver and gold as money in 1873. So if the banking elite, or the bankers at large, wanted to monetize silver, or never demonetize it, let's say, just kept it as money, there would be a huge discrepancy between the gold-silver ratio that there is now, because silver is actually scarcer than gold, not in the ground. It's 10 times more plentiful, but above surface, it's less plentiful in monetary form, because so much is used in your TV set, your flat screen, the defrosters on your rear window, your refrigerator, your washing machine, all communications devices from your laptops to your cell phone. All of that silver is sitting there being used in almost infinitesimal amounts, measurable amounts, very small amounts, but in billions and billions and billions of applications. So when you take all that silver out of the pile, what's left for money isn't that much.
Absolutely fascinating speaking with you, David. Thank you for joining us here on Money and Me.
Well, my pleasure. It was a great interview. I appreciate it.
He's David Morgan, precious metals commentator and founder of the Morgan Report.
Before acting on the information on Money FM, please consider if it's suitable for your own investment objectives, financial situation, and risk tolerance. To listen to more great interviews, download our podcasts at moneyfm893.sg or download the SPH radio app available on Google Play or the App Store.